You thought Millard, Kyprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Nobody does it better. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Indeed, it is Hockey Central at noon. Gord Stellick, John Shannon. I'm Brad Fay, the Sportsnet Radio Network on Sportsnet. You're watching on television and down in the United States on the NHL Network. We welcome you. Final four shows, but there's no off season for some of us here. John's getting on a plane tomorrow. Where are you going tomorrow? Are you going Vegas then?
I'm going right to Sunrise, Florida.
Yes. Well, either way,
I'll be at the beach by 11:30. Nothing going on there.
Very good, Gord. I loved it. You know, you're great. You're great with the stories of when you were in charge and getting set for drafts.
I was just going to say you're great. Okay,
well,
sorry.
You're great. With the stories. I lost my train of thought. You see, it was tough to come up with.
It's like, wow, it's Star Trek show.
Checklist. Man, did I make a mistake? Yeah. I started that sentence with you're great.
You're average. so many years ago, and it hasn't been that recent that the change in the draft, like the preparations now with the internet and with the scouting system and everything, it's just nothing left to chance. But what was your approach? What was it like, you know, those years ago when you were a GM and 3 days out from the draft? Was there that much going on then, or was it pretty clear cut? You watch a guy do a bench press 10 times, you're like, he's our guy.
We weren't doing the bench presses so much back then, whatever. Maybe a couple of guys.
Was there a combine?
There was not a combine yet. So okay. You would bring them in for, poor guys would do sometimes, like I can remember at a hotel and they ended up drafting him, Trevor Linden, like the scouts are doing a makeshift kind of thing at the Sheraton Montreal to run him through, you know, yeah. Just to a last minute check on a guy that they ultimately took second overall. But, you know, there's a lot more similarities, but it just was insular, like in a little goldfish bowl. So first of all, just like now being on the media side, we're getting stopped about everything. Everyone's excited about if you're here, who the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to take, or if you have another team, just how the draft's going to go. And that would be it, the constant buzz and energy that way. It's a fun day, fun leading up to a day, because everybody wins, at least on that day. But this is the big difference, okay? I know this is a little antiquated. There's more modern ones. You were working the phones, though. There were no cell phones at all. So, I mean, the phones were a big thing. And, you know, just where's the and the,
I'm sure their deals were missed because phones weren't answered and you couldn't get in touch with the person in time.
Yeah, fax machines broke, yeah. Or too many people were at a bar in Montreal.
It's like the wire copy spitting out, yeah. Right, John? Slowly, I think someone's been traded.
So, you'd be calling guys in their hotel room. So, I mean, you'd be calling like, okay, Glenn, say they're staying over at the, you know, like whatever hotel in Montreal, and you call, can I have room 438? And, you know, and you would. I'm surprised more people didn't crank the rooms, but anyway, they didn't. So, but it would be a constant thing. Because you, and then you keep talking, and then you had friends in the business, and you're trying to, you know, it's funny, the last night of the 89 draft, we took Scott Thornton third overall, and Stu Barnes was ranked fourth overall. And that was our absolute discussion, okay? Mm-hmm. Just go over it one more time. And actually, it's funny, you mentioned Glenn Sather. He called about something, and then he was kind of curious who we were taking. And because Winnipeg picked next and was in his conference, yeah. he took a quick look and said, our guys like Thornton better too, right? Because, yeah. I mean, theory, it would be better for him if we took the better player than a divisional rival took. So it was very similar, but it was like Mayberry. Sure. It was a small town thing.
Well, and let's face it, the whole concept of what I would suggest from middle of May to draft day has changed drastically just because the science of the business, the psychology, interviewing players. I mean, I talked to one scout last summer about this, and he says there's five or six checkpoints that a team goes through. Their doctors, what is his bone structure like? You know, can he deal with, you know, other than not just pure medical stuff? And in the end, one of the six checkpoints ends up being, does he have hockey talent?
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
the psychology, it's the physical.
Let's get around to that.
You know, the skating style, can he play hockey? Mm-hmm. I mean, all of that stuff, it's just so much more complex because it's so much bigger business now, isn't it?
Well, and you'd walk, like the Montreal Forums where it started in 1980,
sure.
The public draft. And the first couple of years, I'd say to people, you should just drop by. Like it was Wednesday morning at 9.
Yeah. Didn't need a ticket.
There was 1,000 or two people there. And then by 85, it became what it was. But the first, so it was all novel guys being there. And you'd run into other GMs in the restroom chatting or whatever it may be. And also you'd go to get a coffee and it was in the corner and an agent would be, psh, psh, hey, what's going on here? I got John Shannon here. He's a second rounder. It's the fourth round, you know? Yeah. And a scout would come back with his coffee and go, hey, that, I'll use names like, say, Bill Waters, Ricky Curran, they're whoever, Donnie Meehan, you know, they're asking about why is this guy? And so it was funny, all these different balls in the air.
Speaking of Montreal, name escapes me now, and you know, I guys remember as soon as I mentioned where they had him hidden in the hotel
Peter
room.
Svoboda.
Peter Svoboda.
I was there.
That was one of the more dramatic moments. And all of a sudden, there he is.
He was backlit or something, came out, and then a guy who, God rest his soul, Barry Tobogadon, got drafted by the Flyers and stepped over the seat, and it went up, and he got caught. So he couldn't get to the Flyers' table for well over a round. And I can remember even Brian O'Neill looking up and saying, yeah, he's still – they had to actually have the maintenance guys take the seat right off and all that. So he spent about a round and a half before he could greet the team.
Yeah,
as long as he didn't break his foot.
He didn't break his foot.
Other story that I remember hearing in Vancouver in the draft 1990 when the Canucks took Nedvin. That was a great draft with Richie and Primo and all the guys at the top. But a guy that was, again, just the lack of – not Nedvin was Seattle, close by to Vancouver. Sure. They needed a skilled guy. He was the skilled guy at that draft. So he goes number two. And then he wasn't eventually. Here's that part of the story. So the guy that was with Nedved, sort of his confidant from Seattle, because I don't even, you probably had an agent, but it wasn't the same setup. You had other guys. So Pittsburgh picks Jágr.
Jágr,
fifth. And the guy says to him, literally, the guy who's his confidant says, do you know who this guy is? And Nedved goes, shh, he's better than me.
Listen, that was at BC Place.
Yeah.
It was 1990. And I'm standing at the fence.
Don't tell anybody.
I'm standing at the fence, and Scotty is the director of player personnel for the Penguins at the point. And Scotty bounds over to the fence, and there's two or three of us there. And it's like he has, you know, he's the cat that caught the canary. He says, we won the draft. We just stole the draft. We got Jaromír Jágr at five. And really, that was the beginning of, when you think about what Lemieux did about having that extra linchpin for that team to become a winner. But that's an absolutely true story. And the place, Vancouver, and
they would have rioted if they didn't pick Nedved.
When they got Nedved, everybody thought that we got exactly the player.
There's 30,000 people there. You talk about 1,000. You know, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it started,
and it was the start of the Quinn era. Yeah. You know, early and yep.
Peter
Lyndon
Nedved
had been picked
Vancouver was a done deal.
And the other part about that draft, if I remember correctly, was Mike Ricci went fourth overall, a lot of people thought he was going to go first overall.
Yeah. So and I just no, it was Nolan that popped up.
Yeah.
Right,
Nolan
very
went,
end
but I,
first.
But I remember him being asked, how do you feel? You thought you're going to go first overall? It's kind of like, I don't know. I'm going fourth.
But I remember because it was Ricci, Primo, Nedved, and then all of a sudden Nolan. It was one of those guys that the night before. Similar happened with Stamkos. From what I remember, was sort of the late charger. All of a sudden, then he becomes the automatic number one.
You think?
I'm not sure if it's in there. I remember, but I remember him not being the sort of guy that was talked about all year because kids are 17 when that year starts. Right, it takes a while to.
But like Christmas though, Stamkos
That quick clip. I don't forget, but that quick clip about throwing a microphone. You know, like I said, whether it's in Mike Ricci, but I also remember Dave Maloney with the New York Islanders and just said, "We got the better Lindros." Don Maloney. But I mean, like, we got the better Lindros and more trying to pump up Brett, right?
Absolutely.
When they drafted him, but just kind of like you let it resonate for a second.
Guys didn't like Eric. I remember a guy saying that Pat Falloon, they got the better player. I mean, because people didn't, you know.
Wow.
Because Eric was picking where he wanted to go.
Hey, listen, Pat Falloon and Ray Whitney in Spokane were supposed to be a dynamic duo, and Falloon was supposed to be a no-brainer, and Whitney was the risk. And how long did Ray Whitney play in the National Hockey League?
The Wizard
was fantastic for 20 years.
But Scott Niedermeyer would have been a nice way for San Jose to start, take him second instead of...
We can run the Tom Curvers feature anytime.
So 1990 to close the gap, you know, it's 25 years ago, so there's an anniversary anyway. Nolan to Quebec, Nedved to Vancouver, Primo to Detroit, Ricci, Philly, Jágr to Pittsburgh. That's a pretty good top five. So you say you're not going to Vegas, obviously, with the GM meetings. You're going to be paying close attention to them. Overtime is the one that maybe gets the fans most excited.
Yeah.
And I heard Elliot last night saying that it's down to two things. The players want to go 3-on-3 right away because they don't want the games to be any longer, which you can totally understand. And the other side wants 4 minutes and then three.
Well, except that at the general manager's meetings in March, the league actually said, well, let's just go to 3 minutes. And it's kind of, it became a very much a, and it's not a major issue, but it started to become a public negotiation about this issue. The players don't want to play more than 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the players, I think, support the 3-on-3 to a certain point. But I think there's been a bit of pushback from the managers and perhaps some people in hockey ops to say we want four and then three?
You know, again, whether it's management, hockey ops, players, fans, media, whatever, I it just, to me, comes down to how much do you want a result without the shootout? And I think
75% of games, if they really believe that going to the three-on-three at some point, whether it be 7 minutes or 5 minutes, you're going to get to you're going to solve 75% of them.
Well, and I'm one of those guys with that. I mean, it's funny. The shootout does it's kind of a gimmicky thing, but we're used to it. It's always a crappy way to lose, right?
It is.
I don't know, whatever.
And it's lost a bit of the luster.
Well, yeah, it was novel when it came
out. I love it, guys. Yeah, 2005.
No, still
I love it. We sat there, Brad. You and
the,
I sat
the 20, 22 rounds.
Florida Washington this year, and it was come on
72
it's
rounds.
Fun. It's
no,
fun.
But isn't it more exciting 3-on-3, 4-on-4? In overtime,
yeah,
that can be. Anyway, well, I'm for the result. I get it. You
know, what about this? What about this now? You know, I don't think it's being discussed, but like they did when you think of Jonathan Toews and World Junior shooting one after the other, where you get to say your use fifth shooter in a tiebreaker, then you can use anybody you want, or you know, a guy can shoot every three shots. I don't know if people pay the ticket, and it's fun when you get to the very bottom, when you get the tough guy coming out there skating down where we one shot away from the big, and it's like. In between there are guys that are kind of nondescript. Maybe it's not as exciting. I'd rather see the superstars. Yeah.
How do you fade? Like also when it gets down that deep, at what point can you say, you know, everyone's got the same number of players, but you can say, no, we got two guys that are hurt. So we want to go to the top again and start our guys all over. Anyway, that never happens very often, getting down to the 17th, 18th guy. But I wonder.
Yeah, the other thing out of the managers meeting today is that one step closer to coaches challenge. Mm. And the coaches challenge will be used on only two things, puck across the goal line and offside goals. Okay. So from the perspective, and the ruling on an offside goal will be if the puck comes into the zone and the puck goes in the net, you can appeal what was that offside, and the play only ends either with a whistle or if it clears the zone.
Yeah. There's one every year in the playoffs, isn't there? One that we talk about at least, a real big one.
This year, I would tell you there was three or four in the first round of the
game. The officials are better than ever. The game is just so fast. Yeah. It's you got to be fair.
You know, it's funny. You were talking about what you do around this time, and if there was a general manager, like you, some visuals there of the general managers. Again, going back then, like, you know, that was the only time you were all together in a room. So general managers' meetings would be a lot of trade talk. But now again, you have it all
have
covered
phones,
with email,
that's
everything.
A good point.
But I say now they really have lost their luster that way, because you were looking forward to getting with the other, and that'd be a big part. They'd almost half-ass listen to the agenda and we'd go, hey, Shanny, okay, we talked whatever back then. What about this, that, whatever? And you'd be looking in the room and there'd be a whack of that, because to actually get all together that's the only
and
way.
And then
to
everybody
do it.
Would see. You're talking.
A little bit,
it wasn't private.
Yeah.
And then they got to, I think they're talking about moving Kessel. We need to jump in on
that. We're now the modern day. You help people BlackBerry. Boy, this show sucks.
Exactly. should go to nice.
I didn't do that. Shanny did.
Nice shirt. I think Doug got that, or comb your hair or something. Banger, Maine is where they should be, not in Vegas and Florida. Then you get a lot more done. Lock the boys inside.
Yeah, you get no players showing up for the awards.
Not the award. Yeah, we're going to do it all in one place.
Bangor, Maine?
Nothing.
It's a beautiful little
summer. What about Lewiston, Maine?
Fans of the show.
Good place to be in. Good place to be in the summer.
Cap, quick word on that. Anything of significance going to? I mean, it really just rotates a few million. Like easy for us to say, a few million dollars every year.
Right? I think it'll be around 71. I mean, I think that's what people will get told before July the 1st, if not at today's meeting, and go from there, or at the Board of Governors meeting.
Yeah,
coming up.
You know, it's a not saying that the difference is a nominal amount as far as the projections go. You know, whether it's a half a million here, a few hundred thousand difference. I got to tell you, this is the best way to teach kids math, though. Is the salary cap. Kids that are hockey fans that all of a sudden are trying to figure, I mean, when we were kids, it's about trading cards and that, but it is funny now. They're trying to project their team and what's the cap going to be at. And I think math teachers can get 10, 11, 12-year-old kids motivated by using that.
No, not a bad question. Way to do it. I mean, it's all about trying to get them excited about something. If they like hockey, there's a lot to talk about in that regard. What about the possibility of, I'm going to ask you either-or question, John. What happens first? Relocation of a franchise where Quebec or Vegas are involved, or expansion? And it doesn't have to be either. It has to be imminent. But what would happen
first? I don't see relocation happening yet. I mean, I know that people who watch what's going on with the Coyotes thinks it's imminent. I think they're still going to try to – there's still a few tricks up people's sleeves in order to try to keep it there. They also have, you know, major long-term leases, and the other cities that are, you're always talking about question marks, whether that be Florida or some other town. So I mean, I don't think relocation is much of a discussion yet. Obviously, at the board meeting, there will be discussions, and somebody will say, Gary, where are we on expansion? And then he will come up with, well, here's where we are. Here's where we think we need to be.
You need to submit a formal.
No, do we need to create a committee? Mm-hmm. And that's really the next step, is whether the league will create an expansion search committee. And then, obviously, Las Vegas is at the top of that list.
Vegas, Quebec with the arena, Seattle with the talk, Toronto. Like it's there's never been more possibilities. That from what I remember, where it used to be, okay, maybe there's one natural one that you'd go to. Now suddenly, and they're never going to go that high, but meaning there'd be some competition.
Well, and you think back to when nobody wanted to own the St. Louis Blues. People talk about why were salaries, what they were back then. Well, the Blues, were only like $5 or $6 million when Harry Arnest took them from Ralston Perina. Nobody wanted them. So
Saskatoon,
now,
just about.
Yeah, but now you're right about that as far as the hundreds of millions of dollars for franchises. And, it's funny, we get excited about expansion, but a lot of people then forget, geez, the contraction talks all stopped. There never was going to be a contraction, but maybe the salary caps helped that too. But before, back in the good old days when there were six teams or 12 teams or 14 or 21, but I got to think just – I'm tired of knowing too much about the Glendale City Council.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, what they should change the name of the team to, the Glendale City Council, to get more ink than the Phoenix or Arizona Coyotes.
And I have to think, just listening to Bill Daly and Gary Bettman when he talked to Scott Oak about it, that they'd really worked hard with everybody to keep it there. Mm-hmm. And this time around, it's kind of like, wow.
Let's jump and get Mark Spector on. Okay. Who's on the line, and lots of excitement. Speaking of new arenas in Edmonton, but new players. As Mark, as you know, I am not an insider, but I do hear it from sources that the Oilers are leaning towards Connor McDavid with the first pick. Can you confirm or deny?
Well, geez, guys, I'd rather talk for a little longer about the Glendale City Council than what's going on a few years.
What's the level? What's the level of excitement like there in Edmonton right now? I mean, can you count in a city that's won Stanley Cups? Do they get excited about a first pick that they know is coming?
Oh, listen, it's about. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. Everyone knows they're going to pick Connor McDavid. There is no drama there. But it's more about, I got a real good friend who runs, I'm sitting outside his office because he runs a sort of memorabilia, signed jerseys, pro-am sports, when you're buying a frame picture, all that stuff. He makes his money, this is the regular guy, right? Makes his money off largely selling Edmonton Oilers signed stuff, memorabilia. How do you think his last 7 or 8 years have gone in that business? How do you think it's gone? It's been an absolute struggle for this fella. He just talked to me about waiting for Monday's shipment of signed Connor McDavid stuff. It's all sold before it's even shown up in Edmonton. So, to me, that's a microcosm of one little guy whose fortunes have turned up. Forget about Oilers Nation, all the fans who've been struggling along, like Leafs fans, for so long. There's just the clouds lifted here, man. There's a new GM. There's a new coach. They're moving out the old boys club. Connor McDavid's going to be in order in 2-3 days. Couldn't be better than it is right now for a 29th place team.
Now, are you saying, does this match the hype of Alexander Day going to Ottawa?
No nursing.
All I know is they won't put the McDavid kid in a nurse's. I guarantee you that.
Hey, Mark, McDavid aside, and I know that's a hard thing to do, but he seems to be a lot less talk about Chiarelli having any interest in moving some of the major parts of this club. And I think you probably have to put Eberle and Hall at the top of that list.
Well, and that's a two-part answer, Shani. First of all, Chiarelli said yesterday, he said, in an ideal world, I come in, I spend time around guys, I see how everything's working with a new coach, with a new GM, with this new young teammate. And then I can make my decisions based on, a level of education. He said it's not a perfect world. Sometimes you make trades that aren't perfect. So he didn't rule it out. But I'll tell you part two of the thing, you guys, that is very interesting to me. And this came through an agent, through another player. Basically, one of the Oilers' top players told him, he said, no one wants to get traded out of Edmonton anymore. With this kid coming, with this building going up, I'm not saying Edmonton is the Boston Bruins or Chicago. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is there used to be a list of guys who, if the GM phoned them and said, we're thinking of trading you, they'd say, awesome, where? That list doesn't exist anymore. This is a team guys want to be part of. And to me, that will change whether or not bigger trades get made.
How is it being received or playing out that, you know, the higher echelon guys stayed and then the letting go of a whack of or a number of scouts, pro scouts, junior scouts. The Leafs did the same thing a few months ago. So I don't, in this case, though, when you got Peter Chiarelli, he's really able to come in with his knowledge from the Boston Bruins. And since they fired him, he basically listened to their scouts for most of the year and maybe had a different frame of mind going into the draft. I mean, do you think it came down to that he said, look, I appreciate your information, but really it's useless as far as my thinking is because I got my information from my previous place and I'm thinking a different direction?
Well, you know, you guys know the industry. You don't want to fire scouts after the draft. The draft is a place where unemployed scouts go to find work. And if you respect them, you give them that opportunity. Pete Chiarelli had his scouting meetings here in Edmonton with all the people, Stu McGregor, his Ontario scouts that he let go. So they've compiled their list based on that group of Edmonton scouts, a few of which have now been let go. So I won't say completely, Gord, that he's basing this on the Boston scouts. He called all the knowledge that the Oilers organization paid for in employing those scouts for the last 12 months. But I think what he also did was realistically say, look, I'm not keeping you guys, so I'm going to let you go now rather than 2 days after the draft. Good luck to you, and hopefully you can find work down in Florida.
So you're saying he did a good thing? I mean, Mark, that to me, this close to the draft is almost as bad as after the draft. Seriously.
Well, what were you going to do, though? You can't fire your scouts before you compile your draft list.
Well, the Leafs did.
It's funny. Other teams have done that. I mean, I'm not suggesting that you're wrong. I'm just saying that if these guys were good enough to compile the lists, aren't they good enough to work there?
Well, I'll tell you what. The Oilers' draft record tells you that they need to turn some scouts.
Oh no, I don't disagree with you, but
change. So does their pro scouting.
Yeah.
Now, I guess my point is, if I own the company and I've paid the employee for 11 months, I want that 11 months worth of information mm-hmm. before I let the employee go. I know it's a tough, crappy world some days, but that's how it's got to work.
Yeah. Now, take a look. You mentioned, or Shanny was saying earlier about there seemed to be a pulling back on having to make trades, having to make deals. But, you know, the big stud defenseman or a stud defenseman or whatever, is there a kind of player out there that you see being feasible, they may be targeting, whether it's a free agent, whether it's a trade or something like that, because Connor McDavid's still going to make you top heavy with what looks like great young forwards.
Oh, no. Listen, they need a goalie, and they need, frankly, a top defensive pairing because they don't have a number one or a number two in this town. So that's a really tall order. You know, he'll solve his goalie issue. There's enough goalies out there. There's more goalies than there are teams after them, frankly. So, you know, the goalie will come. But the real tough part, guys, becomes, okay, if I need a number one and two defenseman, and I'm Peter Chiarelli, do I just hold out until I can find a number one or two defenseman and not bother upgrading any more defense? Because I may go through the summer, and I may find that I can't find a number one defenseman on the market, right? They're not growing on trees. Do I say, I'm not tough enough in my bottom four. I want an Adam McQuaid. I want to upgrade my second pairing. Do I just sit on my hands so I can find a one and a two? You might be sitting on your hands all summer if that's the case.
Did Peter indicate if he was considering to do the RFA thing in the offer sheet for Dougie Hamilton?
Well, not for Dougie Hamilton. He did not name names, but he said specifically, I am not opposed to an offer sheet. That is something I would definitely consider doing. So he did not slam the door on that, John.
You sure he didn't say, I am not a poso? We're not getting Kalaposo, or is he not a poso? Anyway, Spec, we're short in time. We'll let you go, but go ahead, John, one more, quick. Yeah.
There are other first-round pick. Do you think they'll move him?
Well, here's the deal. I'll make it real short. I've figured this out over the course of talking with a few people. The Rangers are going to want this number. The Rangers will trade him Cam Talbot tomorrow for the number 16 pick in the draft. Pete Chiarelli does not want to give up his 16th pick for Cam Talbot. He wants to give him his second-round pick for Cam Talbot. It's 33. Here's the problem. Buffalo has two picks between 16 and 33. So that's the question mark. If he has to give up 16 for a top defenseman, he will. I don't think he's going to give it up for a goaltender.
Excellent stuff. That's Mark Spector, Sportsnet senior NHL columnist. Spec, we'll talk to you at the draft.
All right, boys.
The other thing is I expect either Cam Talbot or Robin Leonard to be at Edmonton Oilers next year.
Yeah, well,
between the two, those
as
are
Mark
two
said,
guys,
there's a lot of possibilities. We're going to take a break, come back. We'll talk about other trade rumors out there, many involving the Toronto Maple Leafs, other Canadian cities perhaps on the radar as well as making big moves. Big offseason coming. The draft's going to kick it all off, and we're back on Hockey Central at noon after this.
Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back on Hockey Central noon with Gord Stellick and John Shannon. I'm Brad Fay. John, you want to... the cap stuff?
Yeah, just to finish off our discussion, just as we went on the air, the Players Association and the league both came out with press releases announcing that the floor, the lower limit, rather, is 52.8, the adjusted midpoint, 62.1 million, and the upper limit of 71.4 million cap, which means the players have elected to use the escalator clause in the contract to go up the 5%. What it also means for players, and I know there's only 700 of them listing, is that their escrow payments will be larger because they want a higher cap limit. So what that allows, teams are going to be able to have a little bit more leeway, and by the way, in the summertime, you can be 10% over.
Okay, and the one that everybody's watching in terms of the best team in hockey, the Chicago Blackhawks, are obviously the biggest story going forward, and Patrick Sharp, does that, those numbers do anything?
No,
you just mentioned, do anything for them?
No, they're going to have to make some adjustments, and I think that I think everybody, even on the Hawks, was even well aware during that Stanley Cup run that something's going to happen. It could start happening as soon as tomorrow.
Yeah,
because Stan Bowman's going to want to retool his club and get some picks for those guys, get some guys that that they can actually draft, and because they've given up a lot. Remember, they gave up a lot for Antoine Vermette. They gave a lot up for Kimmo Tiivanen.
They need to repile, especially given that the draft picks develop in 4 or 5 years. Kane and Taves are still there and still just on the outside of their prime.
And with their new contracts kicking in next year, that's 12. One of the huge factors for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, no, and one part, people, for the average fan, certainly the players, they just say all 700 of them realize about the escrow. Well, the average fan doesn't realize there's a percentage they don't see. I mean, it goes. So they're basically, whatever the arbitrary amount is, say 10% each year.
That's the price you get. That's the price you pay for being in a partnership. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in revenue sharing, there has to be a pool of money that you divvy up at the end to make sure that both sides get their even amount.
Yeah, but
I also wonder about the trades that last year, this new angle. Now, the New York Islanders, it was a little bit coincidental that it was right after the ownership change that they decided they could get Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk. And, you know, I'm wondering if teams will be able to wait like that. Because, like you say, you could be 10% over in the summer. But then the Blackhawks were a team that said, okay, we got to do something. And it was Nick Leddy was that move late, mm-hmm. and the Islanders benefit that way. So I don't know how much, you know, maybe they want to play it earlier. Maybe other teams are going to follow the Islander model and say, let's find out when guys are really in trouble and see if we can move in for the kill then.
But it does go based on, you know, who will become free agents. The reason Leddy and Boychuk got moved at the key times was they were going to become unrestricted free agents the year after, and the Bruins and the Blackhawks weren't going to get anything for them. Mm-hmm. So they got something in return for them. Did it hurt? Obviously, it hurt the Bruins much more than it hurt the Blackhawks in the long run and helped the Islanders. At the same time, I think you look at a draft like this, and everybody talks about how deep this draft is and what quality players you can get in the, you know, late, even late in the first round. And do you then go out and try to make that deal before Friday night?
What, and along those lines, what would Sharp fetch? You say what's a good fit for him, what's a bad fit for Patrick Sharp, but it all depends on finances first, and then would they be looking just to stockpile stockpile picks?
I think, I mean, yeah, the, because I'd...
What about Edmonton? What about the 16? You know, I mean, I just, again, just having some fun suggesting. There's a guy they could, a veteran who's won, wouldn't mind him beside all those young kids, Gord.
Well, it's he's a higher Dave Boland, put it that, like, you know, a couple of years ago, and they took draft picks for Dave Boland. Mm-hmm. And, boy, I just, first-round picks is, even if it's 16th overall, I mean, that's your hope, right?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And Patrick Sharp.
But maybe with the number one being McDavid, and you got that in the like, and given what you've done with your first pick, I think Edmonton's interesting.
But this world is much different than, you know, your asset for my asset. I'm, you know, if I'm sitting there as the team that has the pick, I'm saying to Stan Bowman, listen, I'm doing you a favor too. Mm-hmm. You're going to get rid of almost $6 million a year.
Yeah.
That you've committed to, that you signed that contract. I'm going to be nice enough, and I say that with a tongue planted in cheek a little bit, I'm going to be nice enough to take that off your plate.
Yeah, but then the competition, someone will say, well, I'll be nice enough, but I'll give you this.
So the answer is whatever the market will bear is what, yeah. And you do hear a team like Florida. Dale Tallon was the guy who traded for him to Chicago from Philadelphia. Montreal, I've heard Montreal's name in some interest in Patrick Sharp, and wouldn't Sharp fit nicely as a pure goal scorer for a team that
needs it? Yeah.
Needs a
yeah,
pure goal scorer.
For sure.
So those are two teams that are out there. I mean, and maybe even a team like Buffalo that does have a lot of assets to give if Tim Murray is really serious about getting to the promised land quicker.
Well, a team like Pittsburgh as well, in that they're
but
up
they
against
have no
the
money, though.
I know. I was just going to say that's the problem. Okay, it's just like wanting to buy a car but not having money.
And
but
they've
I,
already given up their first round pick.
Yeah, but but I just mean about teams that talked about changing the character makeup a bit. You know, that's the guy. That's where Patrick, like Brad Richards.
I agree.
You know,
that
was a free. You know, had got bought out, so he was a free agent. He made a smart move going to Chicago. Taking less money. In the case of Patrick Sharp, he doesn't control that. You've got a finite salary, but it would be that kind of team that he'd have value of. How about, you know, we can get back to Chicago, but I think if we're looking at the two teams in the finals, what a great job Tampa Bay's done. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, they got 1 year away from Steven Stamkos and the big one. But otherwise, just the drafting and that, when you draft well, you look at it, they got guys locked up at Bo Diddley. I mean, they've got a real smart contracts in place, and then could go out and give a guy like a Strawman a bit of an eye opener.
Sure,
but he showed the value.
Mm-hmm. And strength and success at the minor league level doesn't always pay off. But that was the pattern for Tampa Bay, where 2 years later, then all of a sudden these guys, and maybe that's why that right now the money is in control, because some of those guys were, a lot of those key guys were in the minors 2 years ago.
Yeah, and there's a name that works for the Lightning that deserves a lot of credit. And we talked about Edmonton scouts, but Al Murray is the chief scout for the Tampa Lightning. And, I mean, Tyler Johnson was not signed by anybody. Somebody had to go find this guy in Spokane and think that he was a quality player. And this is the time of year where, I mean, this is kind of leading up to their Christmas time, but guys like Al Murray deserve a ton of credit for building that franchise. And I know Steve Yzerman's done a good job, and obviously John Cooper is the coach. But a guy like Al Murray probably doesn't get enough credit at key times.
And that's when you're adding the next spice, your weight. You know, an Anton Strowman was so key compared to a Ryan Malone a few years ago. I mean, you know, just same thing with David Clarkson in Toronto. I mean, they added Boland, they added Bernier, and, you know, these were all good positive moves. Mm-hmm. And then everyone thought, wow, they've hit the mother load, which really, you know, wasn't the case in that case. And I look at when we get to free agency again, and we're going all over the place, but that's the time of the year that you do it. But Clark MacArthur was a great signing by Ottawa. I mean, those are the kind of mm-hmm. ones that we don't talk about, don't get the big play, but someone looks at it astutely and where is the fit and figured it out perfectly in his case.
And let's remember, the five-day window to talk to free agents, not do deals, but to talk to free agents begins on the 25th. Mm-hmm. So, remembering last year's draft in Philadelphia, there was as much discussion and as many meetings between agents and managers about free agents as there was meeting with the players one more time. So that's another aspect of this week, with the managers meeting today, the awards tomorrow, and then the discussion points about what happens starting Wednesday, of the ability to talk to players and are you interested? We had Bob Murray on the show yesterday, and Matt Bolesky is going to be one of those guys that somebody out there is going to think that he's, you know, we can make him a top six forward and he's going to be a difference maker for us. And who's prepared to pay what for Matt Bolesky?
Yeah, and I wonder how quick we get that moment when, if it happens in the draft, do you expect it? Will Gary Bettman walking up and getting booed and saying, no, you're going to like this.
Yeah, that's right.
We have a trade. I mean, there's nothing nothing more exciting. Yes, nothing in the world is more exciting than that. But in a draft, especially after the first three, four, five picks sort themselves out after the first two that we know, it's to spice up a draft middle of the first round when there's a trade, because now right away you know the pick that's coming just got traded. What are they going to do with it? It was a whole Schneider thing. I mean, the Vancouver fans are just like, what just happened? But now with all these names like Kessel and Phaneuf and Sharp and all these guys that we're talking about, you could have some real, real excitement on that draft floor in the middle.
And that's one thing we've lost from the old drafts is that the GMs, how about John Ronnie Caron, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
Once again, the St. Louis Blues and Montreal Canadiens have made a trade. And they were just, you know, and that was it. Bang, yeah. It'd be six players, like just like that. And modern day, the commissioner does announce it. But you're right. You think of all the other deals. Like, it was LA that did it with Richards and Carter that day. You kind of go, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
We weren't talking about it 5 minutes ago. And somewhat the Sagan deal, somewhat the Bobby Ryan deal, same kind of things. Like, free agent players were going over it all the time. And then these trades come and you go, wow, that's a trade. I hadn't even had an inkling about those particular things, but that's what you're going to see more and more of.
Well, and again, you know, not every team in this draft has a first-round pick. And there seems to be a lot of managers who have traded away their picks trying to find a way to either get into the high level of the draft or even get a first-round pick. And that, to me, is a big part of why we're going to see some player movement this week, or at least a lot of discussion about player movement this week. You know, I mean, the Mike Richards, Wayne Simmons trade is one of those ones where you think like that was kind of cool in the end. And with Jeff Carter going to Columbus and then ending up in LA a little later, you know, that the days of, and these are guys with long-term deals. These were guys
that you never thought were
movable at one point.
And then the other one is about moving up. That's a very NFL thing to do, but it's come in the NHL a bit, and it'd be kind of thing. Generally, a GM has one or two real trusted scouts, and it's them that might plant the seed, that might saying, okay, we're drafting 20th. I got to tell you, in the first 20, there is John Shannon. Mm-hmm. He's slated to go maybe around
a little slow.
Maybe 15th, whatever, just the kind of thing. Yeah, he's got a lot of information.
Good in the corners.
And so then you all of a sudden, then you're playing a, it's like Vegas a bit, and your scout is like base, and you're saying, this is the guy around our area that really can play, have the best chance to play. So then you, okay, should we move to 18? Should we move to 16? Whatever. You start trying to figure all that out. That's another fun game too. Just moving up two or three spots can make all the difference.
You know, it's a fun game, the inexact science of it, and looking back, and there's a couple that I want to touch on because someone will say it's unfair. And it is to a certain extent because a lot of teams pass on these guys. But you talk about possible franchise-changing guys, and you look at 1977 for starters. No, this was Hall of Famer Mike Bossy. The greatest natural goal. Yeah. Although I hate when they don't say Gretzky's the greatest natural goal scorer when he has the top three individual seasons or three of the four.
Nine straight most 50 goals. Goal seasons for Bossy.
Yeah, you're pretty natural. But Bossy was unbelievable. So he goes 15th. The Leafs had
two picks.
Napier to Montreal, and then they took Anderson and
Trevor Johansson.
Two Marlies.
Both out of the Marlies, and Napier from the Marlies went right before him. So two chances,
but Napier,
and they took a forward and a defenseman and passed on Bossy. But go ahead, John.
Napier was a strange situation because of the WHA.
Yeah, he was. He'd been with the Toronto Toros
That was Montreal. That's fine. I mean,
Rick Seeling went after too. Buffalo took Rick Seeling before Mike Bossy. Yep. You know, there was still back then that the toughness.
Canucks took Jerry Gillis the fourth overall.
The toughness of the rightly or wrongly, the toughness of the Quebec League in the era of the Broad Street Bullies was questioned, and who could and some guys came into what was a brutal NHL then.
So true.
And got, they weren't
we
all
don't, we don't need a skill Lady Bing 50 goal scorer necessarily.
So anyway, that was the unfair knock against Mike Bossy, which much to the pleasure of the New York Islanders was proven wrong.
And then the 79 that you got a great story about because you look again, Hall of Famer Ray Bourque goes 8th. The Canucks pick Rick Vibe, which worked out well for Toronto eventually. But the first pick, Rob Ramage, which I think was the obvious, you get that stud defenseman. Perry Turnbull, Mike Foligno, Mike Gartner, again, Hall of Famer. Craig Hartsburg.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are solid NHL players. But before Bourque, the pick, Keith Brown, 7. Ray Bourque ate to Boston.
Yeah, story. No, it's a great. And by the way, I got to give props. Jim Papin was listening the other day. We talked about Pierre Palat. He goes, you forgot to mention I got 221 goals in Chicago after the Palat trade. So he did. Got to mention to Pappy that way. But yeah, it was done in hotel rooms then because the merger with the WHA. So people, it was done late as well. So the Boston Bruins really wanted Keith Brown and from Portland. And on the conference line came Bob Pulford's voice, distinctive voice, that they take Keith Brown. And the Bruins are next. They got that number one pick in a trade with L.A. for to flip picks, I think, and Ron Graham, the goaltender. And one of the scouts, I guess, threw his book down. They were so mad. They were angry that Keith Brown was one pick away. So they went with their next defenseman on their scouting list, and that was Ray Bourque. So how about that?
Yeah, Ray Bourque, fall into your lap. Yeah,
not about as good as it gets. And they were actually disappointed at the moment to pick him.
Really does tell you the subjectivity of the sport. Nobody has the magic elixir. There are guys that maybe have a better formula. I mean, for the longest time, David Conte in New Jersey was supposed to be the wizard, the guy who could, you know, draft late and always find a guy that could contribute to a team situation. You talked about the Islanders. Jerry Eamon was a legend as a scout for the Islanders, and all those years that our pal Bill Torrey and Al Arbor were getting credit for creating an organization, it was Jerry Eamon doing all that stuff. In Philadelphia, Jerry Melnick.
Yeah,
was one of those guys. There were tons of people in and around this game that have never received the proper credit for building organizations just because they are great bird dogs.
Well, in a couple of years, you know, again, it's just fun. This is fun to look, and I have the book in front of me, which is great reading. Sometimes you just get lost in these things. But 1980, the Oilers take Coffey sixth overall. Late rounds, they get Jari Kurri and Andy Moog. The next year, they take Grant Fuhr. And then get Steve Smith in a late round. I mean, all of a sudden, and already having Gretzky and Messier in the fold.
Well, they were built over those three drafts.
And the Islanders were similar with Trache, Bossy, Potman.
And look ahead of Paul Coffey. Jack Button was the head scout. He was a great scout with the Washington Capitals. He loved Darren Veach.
Darren Veach loved went fifth, Darren Coffey Veach. Sixth. But no. And then before that was the Wickenheiser Babbage.
Was Rick Lands there?
And Denny Savard third, Larry Murphy fourth. Oh, Rick Lands went right after Coffey.
Okay.
So they kind of, you know, you get Murphy. Murphy and Coffey too hot. Like but was there a thing in not taking defensemen that high? You know, they always said don't take goalies number one. And then a whole bunch of them went overall. Was it always about getting that score that a defenseman wasn't the sexiest pick because they take longer to develop, et cetera?
Maybe it was the Greg Jolly
now
effect.
Now it's changed.
He went first overall in 74.
Fred Weinstruck?
Well, Freddie was a good third round pick, actually. Yeah. He was a good third round pick.
Inexact.
But dare you put a 18-year-old player on your roster?
Oh, that's a whole different. Absolutely,
all part. When I looked at the Leafs of even you were there, but it wasn't your decision. But when Neely and Boimstruck showed up as defensemen, and you're going, they're too young. I mean, that's the problem.
Well, Benning, McGill, and Boimstruck,
right?
Yeah, and Muni would have been there too, except he got hurt, so we would have had four underage. And Muni, anyway, yeah.
Craig Muni turned out all right. It took a long time for Craig Muni to develop.
What are you looking for? I'm most forward to, John. We got a minute and a half at the draft. Getting there, the excitement around the first couple picks. Are you looking right after that?
No, I actually think that what we're going to see on the floor is I do think there's going to be a lot of movement because I think that, you know, trying to get back into the draft, trying to get a first round pick, trying to juggle to get somebody. You know, there's going to be guys at 8, 9, 10 that people really covet. In those positions to try to find a way. A guy like, you know, Halifax, Timo Meier is a kid who played 2 years for the Mooseheads for Bobby Smith, and he's got a huge upside. And does somebody really covet Meier enough to give something up to get in that spot?
It's a fun time.
Well, I'm going to love it as covering it and watching it basically. But I hope there's people that don't thank, or they have to mention their hometown party. They got to thank the Blackhawks, congratulate them, thank the city, thank the whole thing.
Brian Burke started that.
But man, oh man, like you got 30 of those and it gets a little tiresome.
I think they're changing that.
I hope so.
Good. All right. John's on his way to the draft. Gordon, I'll be back tomorrow with Scott Morrison to take you through the rest of the week leading up to the draft and anything that happens in between. And we expect something will. Hockey Central at noon on the Sportsnet Radio and TV networks. And in the USA on the NHL Network. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
Thanks to John. How about that?